And it's Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's subject, we're going to talk about retirement plan provider gimmicks that you really need to be aware of as a plan sponsor. And of course, first things first, let's talk about some of the events that are going on. We are going to have that 401k virtual bunch on April 22nd with James Moyna, CPA. He has his own firm based out of Chicago and Atlanta. Good friend of the show, certainly good friend of our events, sponsor of Chicago event, Atlanta, as well as the virtual conference that we had in January. Then after that, on May the 10th, we are going to have a special at 401k virtual bunch, special episode, kind of like Different Strokes, with Congressman Jamie Raskin. Should be a lot of fun to, you know, certainly talk about his career and whatnot. He was supposed to be part of that 401k National Virtual Conference, but had to cancel because of this little thing called the impeachment. He was the impeachment manager with the impeachment of President Trump back in January. And then after that, we're going to have some live events, hopefully. The schedule right now looks like St. Louis will be on September the 10th. Houston will be on September 29th, and in between, it looks like Minnesota will be there on September 24th. Hopefully, we'll see what happens. Obviously, these 2020 events, we want to reschedule them for 2021. That's the plan. That's the hope. That's the dream. And then a event in Las Vegas in December, and we'll call 2021 a wrap. And then hopefully, we can start planning 2022. You know, obviously, this has not been fun, you know, scheduling these events and working with the venues and paying the stadium out and all this kind of stuff and holding our sponsors' money and whatnot and not having the opportunity to hold these events. It's just, you know, stressful and whatnot, but obviously, anybody who's been holding any type of event or scheduled to hold any type of event over the past year or so has certainly been in the same boat. And then, of course, next January, we are going to do the National Virtual Conference. You can sign up. We have a handful of people who already signed up for the event. Should be a lot of fun as well. We'll do 2 days. I just think that, you know, like in the future, it doesn't make sense to have a national event of any kind. You know, asking people to congregate around the country for your event, you know, unless your name is NAPA, FI360, ASPA, or whatnot, you're going to have a tough time getting an audience. So I just think that the, a virtual event is certainly easier for most of us. So I look forward, of course, go to that 401ksite.com for further information. The Houston St. Louis events should be up available to sign up for. So let's talk about retirement plan provider gimmicks. You know, again, I've been doing this for 22 years, and it's funny spotting out the gimmicks. I'm very critical of the retirement plan business. I've always been. I'm one of those people. I'm the turd in the punch bowl. I kind of tell it as I see it. You know, and there's just certain things that just are just hilarious or kind of funny, and it's kind of funny to spot out. My frankness and openness, you know, endears me to a lot, and it offends a lot. I just find it funny that you know, my big mouth gets me in a lot of trouble sometimes. Especially, we'll talk about one of the subjects, and I'll tell you a funny story about that. So anyway, first thing that I think is a gimmick is when, when a plan provider offers free services for a certain period. You know, I remember there was a local gym offering a free workout, and the moment you entered the gym, it was just one giant sales pitch. You know, they gave me a couple workouts, and it was just, as soon as you stepped in, you know, you had to sign up. That was all the pressure. It wasn't about the free services that they were offering. And if you recall, Netflix, this huge streaming giant, started their business in the DVD rental business. I know, because the first DVD player I bought was, I think, in the year 2000. And it was a little card. I don't know if it was a yellow card or was a red card in with the DVD machine, offering free rentals to start, you know, with Netflix. And that's how I joined Netflix from the very beginning. And, you know, free services are just a great marketing tool that some, you know, do, and that's how some companies do business in acquiring customers. In the retirement plan space, you know, you'll see a lot of plan providers, such as the TPA, offer a certain period of free service as part of the contract. Free services for a gym might be nice, the same for DVD rentals. As a retirement plan fiduciary, I don't think you could really fall for that free service gimmick. And that's what it is. It's a gimmick. You know, there are many reasons why you should pick a TPA, but in my opinion, a free plan your quarter or 6 months of service isn't one of them. And, you know, unlike a DVD rental business, you know, I can easily, you know, with this free period of time, you have the opportunity to cancel. So if you decided back in the day that you didn't want any more Netflix rentals, it wasn't that hard to terminate that offer, especially when they wanted to charge you. Firing a TPA or stopping that free service is obviously a lot harder. Deconverting and moving on to another TPA is a whole tribulation in and of itself. And the problem is that ERISA requires plan fiduciaries to be prudent. It needs to be prudent and rational. Free services don't make a list of good reasons to hire a certain TPA. I think that free services are a gimmick. As any provider that doesn't want to lose their shirt in offering free services has banked the cost of that, you know, has banked that free service trial period in their fee going forward. Next on my hit list, was always one of my favorite ones, was fiduciary warranties. Now, insurance companies are in the business of insuring risk. What would you say if an insurance policy was free? That means that the insurance company didn't see any risk in offering that free policy. There are many retirement plan providers out there that offer free warranties. It's not as prevalent as it was about 10 years ago, but there are people that do still offer it. Warranties aren't that much in vogue anymore, but, you know, again, like I said, I still know a handful that still do it. The nature of the warranties at the provider, which is usually an insurance company that's serving as the plan provider, they will indemnify the plan sponsor for any losses from litigation concerning the selection of plan investments for a plan where participants direct their investments under ERISA 401(c). The problem is that the indemnification only covers a small sliver of the investment selection process. And that small sliver is the broad range of investment options requirement. And under ERISA 404(c), you know, the broad range requirement is just very simple to satisfy. You know, you pick three investment alternatives and that's it. And, you know, to steal a line from Montgomery Scott in Star Trek III, a chimpanzee and two trainees could satisfy that broad range requirement in selecting three funds. You don't have to go to Wharton. You don't have to be a big Wall Street guru to be able to select three kinds of mutual funds that we'll use to satisfy the broad range requirement. And I can never recall in my history, in the history of retirement plans, I can't ever recall a plan ever being sued for that broad range requirement. I'm sure it's happened, but it's such a, you know, it would be a situation usually where the plan sponsor would make sure that the only investment available was company stock or something, but it just never happens. It's just one of the simplest requirements to meet. You know, you know, fiduciary warranties, in my opinion, aren't worth the paper they're written on, because again, it's in that little circumstance, you know, and as a turn of the punch bowl, I get a lot of heat for saying that, to the point where there was a local representative of an insurance company. He's no longer the New York rep, but he said to me he wasn't going to refer me any business as a result of that article, because that company, insurance company based provider, if I told you the name of the company or identified any close to the name of the company, I'd probably get some heat. But, you know, let's just say that that salesperson, again, doesn't work for the company anymore. He said to me he would never refer me business after reading that article. And of course, and I told him, the problem is he never referred me work to begin with. So, you know, what does that mean to me? To me, a fiduciary warranty is something like lightning insurance. The chances of where you're actually going to be covered are extremely remote. You know, use common sense. Fiduciary liability policies cost money. Fiduciary warranties don't. And the reason is obviously a fiduciary liability policy can protect a plan sponsor against legitimate risks. And a fiduciary warranty doesn't really protect plan sponsors from anything. It's from a small little threat that I can never recall a plan sponsor ever being sued for. Next on my list is payroll providers, is 401k TPAs. If we look in business, Pepsi is one of the great companies out there, because they realized there were certain other business areas that they could venture into and use to further distribute their soda products. I always like them better than Coke, not in terms of the products. I'm a Coke fan first. Coke Zero is still my favorite diet soda. But I've always preferred, it's funny now, I own stock in Coke and I don't own stock in Pepsi, but I think that's dealing with the value of Coke versus Pepsi. And I'm a value investor, but Pepsi was always great about integration, expanding their business beyond their reach. A perfect example is they still own to this day Frito-Lay. Frito-Lay snacks. It's a great way. Salty snacks are a great way of selling product. But the best example of them is when they had the Yum Brands, originally Tricon restaurants, whatever. They were a part of Pepsi before they were spun off into their own company. But at a certain point, Pepsi did own Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And at one point, I don't think they own them anymore, but Long John Silver's and A&W, I think they sold those off. At least the Yum Brands did. Pepsi went into a new business because that's a great way of selling soda, restaurants. And, you know, most fast food places had Coke, you know, McDonald's. Most of the time, Burger King, there was that short little time in the 80s or early 90s where Burger King did sell Pepsi. But in the retirement plan business, major fund companies such as, you know, our friends at Fidelity, Vanguard, T. Rowe Price, went into the 401k TPA business because they saw it was a great way of distributing their mutual funds. These fund companies have done, you know, a decent job as 401k TPAs. The problem is that payroll companies decided that they would go into the TPA business. It's a great way of selling payroll services. We sell this integration or whatever that may be. And the problem is that payroll TPAs are not very good at as 401k TPAs, in my opinion. They're great at marketing. They've convinced many plan sponsors and their financial advisors that there's some sort of important connection between payroll and 401k plans. Payroll is really important to 401k plans because obviously the bulk of the contributions into a 401k plan come from solid referrals, which are from payroll. Payroll data, you know, has to be correct, especially when it comes to determining compensation. So, you know, when I say that it has very little to do with it, I mean, it has somewhat to do with it, but I think the connection is overblown. It's more marketing than anything else. And payroll providers, you know, like I believe, overstate the kind of connection or nexus between payroll and 401k administration. And they also stress the importance of 360 integration between payroll and TPA services. And the problem that I see with that is if it was so damn important that there's 360 integration between TPA and payroll services, then why does ADP and Paychex offer that integration to some of the other big 401k TPAs like Empower and some of the other large companies? And, you know, I really think that 360 integration is overblown, especially if the TPA services behind it are very, very poor. And I have found that the service by these payroll providers with plans that are not safe harbor are just difficult. I just think the service is awful. Safe harbor plans are more difficult to screw up because there's no testing. And I find that payroll provider TPAs expect too much out of their clients because they provide little help to plan sponsors that need a lot of handholding. I found that these payroll provider TPAs make too many catastrophic errors in compliance testing and the administrative tasks that put plan sponsors at risk. While payroll provider TPAs will say, you know, clearly that I'm biased, your bias, you know, my bias is my opinion. And my opinion is shaped by 22 years in the retirement plan business and helping a lot of plan sponsors correct catastrophic errors. While I don't get any referrals from these payroll provider TPAs, I do get a lot of referrals to help fix plans that have catastrophic errors that need to be corrected through the Internal Revenue Service Voluntary Compliance Program. The next gimmick, near and dear, I've mentioned it way over time, a little bit too much lately, but I was consumed by it, especially in December and January, and that's the TPA termination fee. You know, if I get rid of my doctor, I've used the same internist since 1998. But I guess if I did change the doctor, and one day I will, you know, he's not going to be working there forever, and I'm probably not going to stay in New York forever. If I change doctors, my old doctor isn't going to charge me a termination fee. Sure, they may charge me for copies of medical records. I understand it. And, you know, my mechanic, Ralph, I've used him for 24 years now. You know, one day he's going to retire. One day I'm going to leave. But, you know, Ralph isn't going to charge me a termination fee. Yet TPAs are the only business I know that charge a termination fee for any plan sponsor client that fires them. I have a lot of problems with the termination fee, and I understand it's part of the business and like the turn of the punch bowl. I'm going to give my 2 cents on it, and I know I'm never going to change it. It's still going to be there, but the problem number one I have with the termination fee is that I don't see many TPAs disclosing the termination fee when the client first signs their contract for services. And I'm a big fan of transparency, and that fee should be fully disclosed. I've seen situations where the old TPA charged a bloated termination fee because they wanted to punish a soon-to-be former client. You know, and I've stressed this over a phone one came up that I'm a part of where, you know, that just happened. And I put up a big fight, a huge fight, and that TPA did take it personally. But the fact is that it's not personal, it's business, and no business relationship is going to last forever. And ultimately, TPA is going to lose that client one way or the other. It's the old WFAN interview with Davey Johnson. I'm a fan. Davey Johnson was the Mets manager in the 80s, early 90s, actually got fired in 90. And a fan asked Davey whether, you know, in the scheme of things, Davey was always on the ropes of, you know, getting fired for 2-3 years. And someone asked Davey, isn't it true that you're hired to be fired? And I think that that's the situation with TPA. A TPA is hired to be fired. One way or the other, the relationship will end. Whether the TPA gets fired, the TPA goes out of business, the TPA merges, or the client merges or terminates the plan or whatever it is, it won't last forever. So that's why I believe that the termination fee should be based in the PBA's fee because it's inevitable the client is going to get rid of them one way or the other. Since every plan out there will eventually terminate their TPA for one reason or another, it doesn't seem fair for TPAs to charge a fee for client leaving. You know, and I understand that the termination fee is something that, you know, like I said, it's a turn of the punch bowl. It's never going to go away. I still believe that if you're going to have one, it should be fully disclosed at contract signing. Plan sponsors should know what a termination fee will cost them instead of that sticker shock price later. And if, you know, TPA can't specifically state to the dollar amount what the termination fee will be because, you know, obviously the plan was signed with, you know, one price in mind and the plan grew over time, at least at the plan spot, at least the TPA should have some sort of formula to determine what that termination fee will be. And I worked for a TPA where the guy running the company, who was a terrible, terrible man, thankfully he's no longer in the retirement plan business. His business partner was the guy who was the name of the firm, but he was the one, he was the smaller owner of the company, but, you know, ran the place on a day-to-day basis. They would ask this guy, you know, how much to terminate a plan. How much was the termination cost going to be? And quite honestly, he would determine the termination cost based on the relationship that the TPA had with the plan's financial advisor. If you had a relationship with the financial advisor that covered many, many plans, the termination fee would be a lot less than that plan that had a financial advisor who and had no other plans with this TPA. Just my opinion. Next, and last but not least, a feature, a gimmick that's near and dear to my heart because I played that gimmick for 9.5 years. And that's being the on-staff attorney for a TPA. TPAs and advisors have attorneys on staff, and like I said, I did it for almost 10 years. The problem with staff attorneys is that plan sponsors don't understand that staff attorneys don't actually represent plan sponsors. They represent the needs of the people paying their paycheck, which is the plan provider. A TPA attorney can certainly be helpful to a plan sponsor client, but there is a limit. The ethical obligation when you're a TPA attorney or you work for a financial advisor belongs to the people who sign the paycheck. When I worked as a TPA attorney, I worked with, you know, 750 different, you know, plan sponsor clients, but I could not establish an attorney-client relationship with them just based on who was paying my paycheck, which was the TPA. You know, as a solo ERISA attorney for like the last 11 years, my obligation belongs to my client. A perfect example happened recently that showed, you know, illustrated the difference between a staff attorney and a, you know, a ERISA attorney on their own. Perfect example, like I said, a plan sponsor had an issue regarding missing adoption agreements for related employers. I told the plan sponsor that the plan should be submitted to the IRS voluntary compliance program, and the TPA's attorney, who wanted to minimize their company's exposure, said the retroactive amendment adding these participating employers that went back 8 years could be done through self-correction. And I thought that that was impossible. You can't do a retroactive amendment from from dating back 8 years without getting the IRS's approval for it. When I was a TPA attorney, I was a lot younger and probably a lot more stressed because a good chunk of my time was helping, you know, our clients, but also trying to limit the liability of my company in the way they administer retirement plans. There is always a need for plan providers to have ERISA attorneys. But, you know, they need to be a little bit more transparent that they don't represent the needs of the plan sponsor clients. You know, they do, but the needs of the plan provider always comes first. There is, and there can be, a lot of times when there is a conflict. When you're restating a plain document for, you know, cycle three, there's not going to be a conflict. But when there's voluntary correction that has to be made because of errors committed by the attorney's plan provider, well, that's where the conflict ensues. So, you know, it's a gimmick. You know, they are a great resource. Listen, I don't think I'd be half as good as a risk attorney if I didn't have the experience of working for TPAs and understanding how errors are done, why plan documents and plan amendments should be written a certain way. So I'm grateful for that experience. But again, the beauty of being on my own for the last 11 years is the fact that I represent the needs of my clients ahead of the needs of any plan provider, and that I have that attorney-client relationship that I could not have when I worked for a TPA. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of that 401k podcast. Hope you come back next week. And of course, like I said, go to that 401k site.com for further information on all our events. Thanks. Bye.